this guy gets it. I like him. He's getting angry. Angry is good. Angry gets shit done.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock.
Never before so much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadism.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to Dread Media episode 943. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. I'm fired up. I'm angry. It's Wednesday night as I record this. And yeah, I'm going to tell you all about what's coming up this week. After I tell you that we're proud to be sponsored by the Patron Dreadites, patreon.com/dreadmedia. Support the show, get perks, like early episodes, like they're going to get this probably tonight. I'm on a tear. You know, I got to get to sleep. Work is kicking my ass, but I can probably finish this episode in an hour. Let's try. Anyway. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Thank you to everyone who supports the show. Everybody else, head on over there and check it out. At very least, you know, sign on for a month and check out some perks, like an exclusive podcast, which perhaps next week or the week after is going to receive its final episode, at least in the series. I'm thinking I'll probably switch to do something else just for out of my own interest. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe we'll see what the patrons say. But, yeah, I mean, that's all coded talk for, the Patreon supporters. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. All right. So, man, a lot of shit has happened, this week. But I guess, yeah, I mean, I've been sitting on, you know, it's funny. I talk about the school I teach. That I teach at in this review with Dwayne. And that's the school that I used to teach at. I'm the better part of, oh no. Well, I'm two full weeks into a school year and then some, at my new school, very busy. I'm having a pretty good time, I think. But it's just funny, like, how long I've been sitting on this. I think that Dwayne and I have recorded. Yeah, we definitely have, because Dwayne and I recorded in the summer. So, yeah, this one I have been sitting on, and this is the last bit of content that I have pre-recorded. So I think I'm taking a couple weeks off after this one. I will remind you to get your questions in. If you want a Q&A episode, you better send your questions in to dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com, or you can message me on other platforms where you know that I am. I'll plug all that shit at the end of this episode. But, before I jump into a song, and it's a song that's in tribute of someone who has passed away again. Fuck. I wanted to make myself clear. I think I've been pretty clear in my values and whatnot in the past. I don't tend to talk politics that much unless, you know, the film calls for it. And I guess, I mean, this one is a very political film. But I'm not really talking about the themes of the movie that Dwayne and I are talking about. But, before we get to that review and before we get to any music, I just want to say, you know, we're a couple hours after the Jimmy Kimmel Live news came out. So let me just say, to everybody listening, fuck Sinclair Broadcasting, fuck ABC, fuck Paramount while you're at it. And a big, hearty fuck you to everybody who's all about free speech, except when it's speech they don't like. Go fuck yourself. Seriously. You are pieces of shit, and you are the problem with the world. Okay? All right. And if you disagree with that, fuck you. there we go. There's a little bit of anger. What are we talking about this week? This week, Dwayne and I are talking about the Brazilian, labor rights film. Labor rights siege film, Property. We really enjoy it. We're going to play that. And then I'm going to come back with a Dread Media top five, revolution, uprising, rebellion, films. So, and maybe TV, who knows? So we're going to get to that as well. First, goddamn, you know, I guess it was August when I heard that this guy had been diagnosed with cancer. I sort of heard it in passing, and I honestly, you know, I just sort of like, oh, damn, you know, that sucks. I, you know, all my best. Hope he, hope he heals really quickly from all this shit. I don't know. I think, you know, I knew it was like an oral cancer, and I don't know, in my brain, I was just like, well, Bruce Dickinson, you know, survived, you know, I think tongue cancer he had. I did not know the extent or the seriousness of the diagnosis, but apparently it's been hell for, well, over a month now, but we lost Thomas Lindberg, who was the vocalist for one of the definitive Swedish death metal bands, At the Gates. Of course, he was also a vocalist in the grindcore band Lockup that he played in for several records with members of Napalm Death and Dimmu Borgir. I always love saying that band name, Dimmu Borgir. But Thomas Lindberg was, you know, he guested on everybody's records. He had a shit ton of different bands that he provided vocals for. He's one of, if not the most, recognizable voices in Swedish death metal. Of course, Swedish death metal would exist without him, but it wouldn't be, it really wouldn't feel like, you know, the real loving and close scene that it actually is. I think that's the best thing about Swedish death metal is that they're sort of the opposite of Norwegian black metal. But speaking of, also Thomas Lindberg, is credited as the guy who created the logo for Dark Throne, which is my favorite black metal band, especially OG black metal band. And also, to boot, he was a social studies teacher like me. So, man, it fucking sucks. RIP Thomas Lindberg. And I had a couple Lockup songs I wanted to play. After this episode, all the songs in this episode were locked. I had to switch some shit up for this, but I had some Lockup songs I was going to play that were maybe a little more appropriate to the theme of this episode. But I thought maybe, I did think I heard that they do have another album recorded. And in that case, it would be Lindberg's Swan Song. But, right now it would be their latest record from, I think, 2018. Am I making that up? Maybe 2021. I might be off. I'm not sure. I could probably just look right now. 2021. All right. I was right the second time. I was only off by 3 years the first time. Anyway. Anyway, my concept of time is fucked up. But, rest in peace, the great Thomas Lindberg. And for everybody else like me watching all this shit go down lately, this one's for you. It is the title track from At the Gates' recent record, The Nightmare of Being. This is The Nightmare of Being by At the Gates. R.I.P. Thomas Lindberg.
two French movies.
Yeah.
Which I just thought, well, I mean, no spoilers, but I think we're like the lesser two movies of the batch here. So.
Yes, absolutely. But still, interesting movies, both of them.
Yeah, no, for sure, yeah.
Dwayne.
Dez?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, how's work going?
Well,
remember,
I guess there's
remember,
always
this is kinds this of- is supposed to be a fake conversation, right? Not yeah. The conversation we had at the beginning of this recording session.
You know, it's going okay. I mean, sometimes you know there might be like you know, might be some issues between like management and the rest of the workers, and but nothing too extreme. I don't think like the workers are quite going to go up and take arms against the management.
No? Oh, okay.
No.
That's a good thing. Maybe.
That's
maybe.
A good thing, yeah. And, you know what? I guess, you know, just, you know, no job is perfect, right?
Oh, this
we got
is
ups
true.
And downs. It's this a little, is true. You know? Nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah. So. You know how you can get back at the man?
How?
I like this phrase. The boss makes a dollar and I make a dime. That's why I take my poops on company time.
Oh.
What are we talking about today, Dwayne?
Today we are talking about
Brazilian. Are you looking for the country of origin?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, it was okay. It is Brazilian. Eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I knew it was Portuguese, but okay. Good. Got it. Okay. That's great. Thank you for clarifying that it is the Brazilian movie. Directed by Daniel Bandeira, called Property.
Yeah.
Which can now be watched on Shudder.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we even get started giving the premise of this movie, you and I watched a Brazilian horror movie that took place on a plantation before.
Yes.
Yeah. Was this the same building? Like the house?
That is a good question, because it looked familiar in a weird way.
Because I was watching it, and I'm like, is it that house from that movie we watched? And then I opened up IMDb, and I was like, oh, wait, I don't know the name of that movie that we watched.
I cannot remember it on the air.
Damn, okay. Yeah, anyway, that's just something I thought while watching it, and I was reminded right now, so I had to say it before I forgot again. But yeah, yes. Property, another recent movie, 2022. It's on Shudder. I can give the synopsis if you want.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So the movie begins with a very sort of harrowing piece of cinema verite, I guess. It's shot from across the street. A woman is being held hostage at gunpoint. The police are surrounding. There's a crowd in the streets watching. And then, boom, a policeman shoots and kills the gunman. And they rush in to take the woman to safety, and the crowd cheers. And then we cut to the modern day, where that woman and her husband are in their car going to their family property. Family property is a farm. Did they say what they grow there?
Well, no, I think it's actually more of like a that was more of a cattle ranch, but maybe.
Oh, it is cattle. It is a cattle. You're right. Right. Cattle. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's a family cattle ranch. And they have, well, I mean, they have a bunch of indentured servants, essentially. They have a bunch of workers on the farm who have had their papers taken, and who are acquiring debt, to, I guess, the foreman.
Yeah.
I guess, who maybe, I guess, maybe, puts them up in their sleeping arrangements, I guess, maybe. And that's that they
some
owe
some sort of like,
yeah.
Yeah. Some sort of quarters, like right on the ranch there. Yeah.
Yeah. So while, so we learn a little bit about the couple, other than the woman surviving that attack, and that the husband is clearly very rich and has had this brand new, I guess it's like a crossover vehicle, you know, Jeep Cherokee or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's had it like super reinforced. It's bulletproof. Obviously she's had like pretty serious PTSD, and once they get to the property, she's still like feeling pretty shaky. So he gets out to inspect the property itself, finds things slightly in disarray. What he doesn't know is that when him and his wife were on the way to the cattle ranch, the foreman who works for the guy that they owe the debt to tells them that they are selling the cattle ranch and turning it into a hotel.
Yeah.
And that everybody will be able to get their passports and papers as soon as they pay their debts to Mr. So-and-so, who, ironically, we never see in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're like, wait, I need my papers. I got to go. And it's like, no. And then they can't leave because they have their passports. And also they need like written proof that they worked on this farm, or they won't be able to get a job elsewhere. Right. Or they won't be able to prove that they were legally in the country. I'm not quite sure. I kind of got the feeling that they were local people, but also that they were maybe like sort of nomadic farm workers.
Yeah, I think so. And they did seem kind of concerned, or at least some of them, you know, seemed concerned about just having a place to live, right? Like they kind of got so used to just being there, like this is their everything, right? So
yeah. So they're airing their grievances, and I don't know the terminology in Brazilian or in Portuguese, I mean. And then in the fracas, he is stabbed in the neck. And then, well, everybody's like, well, let's strip this place for parts and see what we can take. And while they're doing that, the couple shows up. The husband walks into the house. The TV is on. Stuff is sort of scattered around the house a little bit. The wife, because she's suffering from PTSD, is uncomfortable and wants to stay in the car for a little bit. It will turn out to be a pretty good decision for at least for a little while. And the husband finds the workers in his house, mm-hmm. and he's basically like, get the fuck out until he is also attacked. And so because they have decided, also a woman whose husband is killed by a horse, I think, that morning. Is that right? Like they take her to the horse pen, and there's a horse in there, and there's blood all over the wall, and then a dead body.
I think that was the guy. Like I don't think it was somebody you got to meet. I think it was the guy who told them that the place was going to be sold. Maybe.
No. So they stab him in the neck.
Oh right. Okay. Yeah.
That morning, her husband, I think, is trampled by a horse. The older woman who like takes charge. So she basically decides, no, we're not going anywhere. This is our land now. So they're like, put the word out to all the other farmers. Cause it's a farmer's revolt, right? So they are taking the land for their own, and they know that, you know, the military or the police will not allow that. So they want friends, because they're going to have to protect themselves when someone comes calling. But one of the first orders of business is to deal with the farmer's wife, who has locked herself in the reinforced car, but she cannot recall. this is such an updated car that you need like to use a voice, code to turn the car on. And she cannot remember it. And so she is stuck in the car. Lots of great shit where someone like walks up and puts a shotgun right up against the window and shoots it and ends up hurting himself more than the more than the window. Absolutely, this is a siege film with a car, not a house. Like, that's the funny thing. It's like the people that are trying to siege the wife are living in the house. She's in the car, right? Truly unique, in my opinion, as far as these kind of films are. And I just, I mean, we've seen sequences where people are trying to get into cars before. And I mean, like, I guess maybe the only thing that, I have seen or can think of that I've seen that all, that almost all takes place in a car would be Cujo.
Right,
and that's the only other one I can really think of. I've seen plenty of scenes in movies where someone is in a car and people are trying to get them out. Of course, they eventually do get out at some point, usually. Or they usually get the car started and drive away. But this movie's all almost all with the car, and that's really what I appreciated about it. I gotta say, I was, I did not, I don't know who played the wife. This is one of those casts on IMDb that is not by, you know, Walter.
Yeah, so she's, Gildo, her name would be Teresa, right? The character is Teresa.
Okay, so that's Malu Ghali. Her performance did not light me on fire for the first chunk of the movie, but like in the last half of the movie, I was like, oh yeah, she's fucking great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, what did you think of, Property?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Again, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is another one that I had recommended. And
yeah, you recommended the whole slate this week.
Yeah, this was only based on the opening with, like, the video of the hostage taking.
Right.
And then basically just the premise, because I was like, you know, I just, like, sometimes my horde have a little bit of, you know, maybe social commentary or whatever to it or substance
regard. Yeah.
And, yeah, so then I just said, okay, this sounds great. And also the fact that it was... also not from, you know, North America even. Not that it couldn't have been a good movie, but just I like to see a little different points of view and stuff, right? So take a little trip around the world with the Dread Mini Express. So and then basically I just loved it. There's one part that we actually like missed. It's not that important, but it does kind of like set the stage for her mindset, like when she's in the car and stuff, is how before, like with dad, her husband character, Roberto, shows her like the new vehicle and all that, and or the vehicle that's been all, you know, reinforced and all that stuff.
Yeah.
She's actually like eating breakfast on her kind of like patio facing like the outside, but then she has like a glass case kind of all around. So like basically her dog can't even like have breakfast with her kind of thing.
Right.
Like
it's
she's like looking at it from a distance kind of thing.
Right. I forgot all about that.
And it's, and I kind of just thought like that's, well, anyway, kind of ends up being a metaphor for like the, her, I don't know, I guess her disposition throughout the movie.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
She's also like a fashion kind of designer and stuff too. So I guess we're kind of made to think she's like, you know, kind of pretty high culture, all that kind of thing. Or
oh, right. Well,
whatever.
I mean,
like,
her husband owns the ranch, right? And that's, they're rich people for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like clearly, you know, the farthest thing away from doing like manual labor and working in the soil. So, So, but there was that. But yeah, like even though we haven't really mentioned it really yet, there actually is like a kind of a real interesting, moral ambiguity to this movie.
Yeah,
that I think is really, really terrific, actually. Like, it's not what I would have expected, but it was like, I mean, I guess I should rephrase that and say it's actually way more than I hoped for. You know, like, just the initial premise is good enough, but then the fact that they're not like this kind of faceless mob or whatever, like the farm workers, is just terrific. Like, it's
you
just...
You know, I'm built, personally, you know, like, the... You know, like my grandfather was a union foreman, like back in the days where they were fighting the police with chains in the streets and lighting trucks on fire, that, you know, that crossed the picket line kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like that shit's in my blood and I am built to be like, oh yeah, what, I'm with these people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
However, like, I'm watching it and, you know, like, the ambiguity is there. And I'm like, yeah, I'm with these people. But also, like, they are in his house. You know what I mean? And he's like, get the fuck out of my house. You know, like, there is, like, you know, you can't completely go with those people because they are doing, you know, they are doing something wrong. And maybe not super wrong, but once they turn towards the car, that's when things go off the wrong end of the deep end, you know, just cause like the way my mind works, I'm like, okay, well, she's stuck in that car. How do we get her? And then it only took me like a few seconds to be like, why don't they just set the car on fire? And yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, but they do at some point in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a pretty good car. But also, I thought about the other thing, and it was, you know, kind of the end of the movie, too, which, pretty great.
Yeah, that was, this is one of these movies where I'm actually very satisfied with the ending. So.
Yeah, I saw it coming, but still, I was like, no, I'm down. I like this. There's also, I'm going to say something that's like coded language. This is like Penn and Teller talking to the guy that is trying to fool them on their show. They're early in this film, like when they stop at like a gas station or something, and he goes in to gets her a magazine, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a fashion magazine. That makes sense. So, at that point I was like, man, I'm really picking up the vibes of The Vanishing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's sort of like ironic, but, I fucking loved this movie.
Yeah.
I might even rationalize putting it on my end of the year list. Mm-hmm. I know it says 2022 on IMDb, but this is one of those where it's like, come on. Like, no one's seen this and no one saw this in 2022. Like release date, October 2022 in Brazil. But
yeah.
And then film festivals in 2023, and then film festivals in 2024, limited release in the United States in May 2024. I'm going to call this a 2025 film. I don't care.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah. I fucking loved it. I think it's, you know, like if you know about what is going on in Brazil, I think it's very poignant, and I think if you know about what's going on in America, it's also very poignant. Mm-hmm. And it's universal, right? Like exploitation, and you know, that's something that I try and express. I teach careers this year at my school to a class of students, and I always sort of like try and get through to them that, you know, you don't beg people for a job, right? Like, people compensate you for your labor, right? It's not a, oh, I have to do this or I won't get the job. No, like, you are compensated for your labor, right? And unfortunately, we live in a world where different forms of labor are valued differently. But regardless of what industry you work in, you're compensated for your labor. So don't, you know, don't grovel, right? You have the power, and this is a great example of the people having the power.
Yeah.
It's not pretty, absolutely, right? And it's very morally gray, but come on. Come on.
Yeah. But it's that, there's so many good things about this. But just the fact that that kind of, that kind of moral barometer, I guess, for the movie is just, it's just like right on. Like it's actually like very consistent in two, like in terms of like, I'm not going to say what certain characters do or don't do, but, like it's like, you know, sometimes people expect maybe some certain characters because it's like a movie and a, you know, relatively, short form of storytelling where someone's going to all of a sudden have some kind of revelation and, you know, do like a 180 and like whatever. The clouds will part and everything will be great again or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like that at all. Like, it's like, it really is, it's just fantastic. It's just, it's one of those things where I just can't, I don't want to mention, you know, some of the best, like, really cool moments and stuff.
Yeah. This is like, one of those, we've just done a bunch of reviews where we talked about movies for like half an hour. But because this one's so good, we're going to talk about it for a little less, I think. But I will say the sense of doom impends in this.
Got, like, realistic, brutal violence when it happens. Like, it's just, it's good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, really good. And yeah, and you see, you know, I mean, you know, we talked about a movie where someone, you know, murders, you know, several people and there's like almost zero violence in the movie. There is a lot of violence in this movie. Whether it's, you know, caused by a person to another person or a person, I mean, you can't really call it foolish when he shot through that window because he didn't know, but he learned pretty quick. And that was some of the most brutal violence, you know, in the movie. Just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. There's a one with a kid, too, and, near the end, and closer to the end, I think.
Right. And, the girl that she's, like, she's trying to get the girl on her side by giving her a dress. Is that what she's trying to do there?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you see she's, you know, a little, I don't know, what kind of younger, probably, and, like, a little more, you know, interested in whatever the city might offer or, you know, those kinds of like, I don't know, bougie kind of material.
Yeah.
Things, you know?
And she saw her from a distance because that girl was almost like always on the patio of the house. Like, and I guess like it was her job to sort of keep an eye on the car. Right. Cause I mean, if everybody's inside the house and she gets out of the car and runs away, then she gets away kind of thing. Right.
Yeah, I think she might be the only person to know how to, like, easily turn off the Wi-Fi.
Oh, right. Yeah. That is a great little shot, because, like, one guy, like, running in, like, trying to figure out what the fuck to do, and then she just walks over to the modem and unplugs it. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, and it's also, like, one of those things where it's like, oh, you're so fucking stupid. How come you can't figure this out? Other than perhaps leaving her sunroof open. What I mean? That might have been a mistake.
Yeah.
But, or maybe not. I don't know. But, yeah, like the whole thing where she's trying to get the phone signal, putting like the cardboard cone over the phone and stuff like that. I thought that was really ingenuitive. You know, I mean, when you have this kind of script, you have to figure out ways to prolong things. Right?
Yeah,
so one of those is making the car impenetrable, right? So now I got to figure my way around that. And I think they do a really good job, right? She's locked in there because she can't, they'll get her if she gets out. That's clear. And also she's like, again, suffering from PTSD. She's not in, you know, there's fight, there's flight, and then there's PTSD, which means you don't do anything, right?
You just kind of
freeze up. Yeah. And that's very realistic. And, like once shit hits the fan, I am very much with her in a lot of ways, but also like the reasons for murder have rarely been so valid in film. You know, and usually when the reasons for murder are valid, it's revenge. It's like, you know, you killed my wife, you killed my child or whatever.
Yeah.
And this one is different and it's smarter and it's politically relevant, socially relevant, you know? I think it's the kind of movie that a lot of working class people can get behind.
Yeah, I think so.
And, anything else to say about Property?
Nope.
Not other than just watch it. So,
and I mean, so like you gave us this whole slew of films. This one was the best surprise to me. Just having like, I'm like, Property. What does that mean? Right. Cause I didn't even look into it. I'd already watched Tropic, right? Tropic was the first one I watched. I don't know what order people are going to get this. It doesn't matter. I don't care. But Tropic was the first one I watched, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what the title is meant to be there. So Property. Yeah. Okay, Property. And then, like, I put it on Shudder, and then I I see the tiny premise. I'm like, okay, this looks interesting. And then I'd say like the first 10 minutes are, you know, a little slow moving, but once the shit hits the fan, this movie is nonstop, thrilling, violent, nail biting, edge of the seat, bullshit, cliche stuff that movie reviewers say. It's all true for this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I think
I'm
going to
give it.
Oh yeah. I'm right.
You know what? I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Yep. I'm with you there. It's a 5 out of 5 for me. Absolutely. No, I'm not going to say that. So, we're going to leave with a song by, I think these guys are a New Orleans band. All one word, goat whore. Yeah, they're pretty good. They're one of those bands with like, oh, that's the name of the band. And they're like, oh, they kind of fucking kick ass. They have a great song from their 2014 record, Constricting Rage of the Merciless. This song is called Baring Teeth for Revolt. Thanks, Dwayne. And solidarity.
Yeah, solidarity. I'm holding my fist right now. So.
Hell yeah, me too.
Yeah.
back for another
Dread Media Top 5.
That's right, another Dread Media Top 5. This time, it's a Dread Media Top 5 Revolution, Uprising, Rebellion of films and television. All right? All right. This was initially just my number 5, but I've added a, you know, like, you know, a tie. I have two things at my number 5. My first is Amistad, because the slave rebellion on the ship scene very early, but the reason it's at the bottom of the list is because it's really more of like a courtroom drama than it is like a rebellion film, even though it contains, you know, it contains a slave rebellion in it. So, I thought, and maybe if you are sharp-eared, you picked up on the intro to this episode containing one of the really only quotes from this monologue that I could do, that I could put in this episode without looking incendiary. But I'm talking about The Secret of Spoons, which is the title of the second episode of the first season of American Gods. And it's from the Mr. Nancy monologue on the Dutch slave ship. And it's one of the most intense... What is the whole scene? 7 minutes, 8 minutes of cinema, like, ever. It's up there. Like, it's super fucking intense. So, yeah, The Secret of Spoons from American Gods, of course, featuring the incredible Orlando Jones as Mr. Nancy, credited as a guest star in that episode, which is wild, because he is the star of that episode. But, yeah, that's some powerful filmmaking. I don't think I ever went back and watched season 2 of American Gods. I should probably try that after a rewatch of season 1, but I'm the better part of the way through season 1 of the original Star Trek right now. So I got to watch all those first. Anyway, I digress. Number 4, told you I was angry. Look, this whole list, I promise you, I have only changed the numbering. But all this shit was there, except for the American Gods part of number 5. I added that today because I'm pissed off. But everything else was in this. I just changed the order around a little bit. But my number 4 is, what is this, a mini series? Yeah. And I can't remember. Is it HBO? Showtime. It's Showtime. That's what it is. Anyway, I'm talking about The Good Lord Bird. It's from 2020. And Ethan Hawke plays I guess like a fictionalized version of the abolitionist John Brown, who essentially his whole latter life was a rebellion against the idea of slavery, a true hero, a true lunatic, a complicated man, as they all are, brilliantly played by Ethan Hawke. It's a powerful miniseries. The reason I didn't know where it came from is because I watch it on Crave, which has the HBO stuff and the Showtime stuff and some other stuff. But, The Good Lord Bird. If you've got something like Crave in Canada or you've got Showtime and you haven't checked it out, you really should fucking check it out. It's really good. And it's relatively short. What is there? How many episodes? 7. 7 episodes. So, not bad. All right, that's my number 4, The Good Lord Bird. Number 3 is another tie, because I kind of think these are sister films in a lot of ways. The first is Michael Collins, which is sort of a romanticized version. It's Neil Jordan, so, but it's like a romanticized version of the Easter Uprising in Ireland. I haven't seen this since it came out, which was 1996. So, yeah. You know, an early, powerful starring role for Liam Neeson. But in my opinion, it is but the spark that lights the fire. And then, in my opinion, definitely the better film, the Ken Loach film, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, with Cillian Murphy and Liam Cunningham as brothers that then take part in the Irish War of Independence and then the Irish Civil War against each other. Fucking amazing movie. The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Erin Go Bragh. That's my number three. My number two was at number one, but I switched things out. But as far as revolution in filmmaking in the year 2025, and pretty much more so than any other year before that, is Andor. I don't think I've been shy about my Star Wars feelings on this podcast, in that I'm not really a fan. Although, ironically, I have said that Rogue One was my favorite Star Wars movie, and I'm not being facetious. I really mean that. So when Disney Plus, I guess, I don't pay for Disney Plus anymore, but I stole my son's because he got it for Christmas from his mother. So I watched Andor. I watched both seasons of Andor. Season 2 was this year, but season 1 was a couple years ago. What a really compelling beat-by-beat telling of a revolution in the happening. And it's so tense and so exciting and so well-written. I'm teaching revolutions in social studies 9 next semester. You know, that's social studies 9 as far as the British Columbia curriculum right now is like 1700s through early 1900s. So, you know, it's like the era of revolution. There's the Industrial Revolution, the French Revolution, of course, the American Revolution, the Haitian Slave Revolt, which I'm excited to teach about, which I'm upset there aren't any like really good movies about. Like, why not? I know there's a couple, but I haven't seen any, but there's very few things about the Haitian Slave Revolt. And I would love a kick-ass movie about that. But Andor should get you fired up. And I think it's must watch right now. I think it's must watch. So that's my number two. My number one, which I will swear to you up and down, has been on this list the entire time. It was just at number three before. I'm talking about Rod Lurie's film from 2001. God, that was 2001. My God. Wild. The Last Castle. Starring, of course, the late, as of today, Robert Redford, and also the late James Gandolfini. Also, a young Mark Ruffalo is in this movie. Many others. Lots of great character actors. Delroy Lindo, Clifton Collins Jr. This is just a really good fucking movie. And Robert Redford plays an imprisoned general who is at this, I can't remember what they call it. I mean, it's the Last Castle, but I can't remember the name of the prison. But he's there and he rallies the prisoners to, like, basically overthrow the, asshole warden played by James Gandolfini. I guess it's a military prison. Yeah, that's what it is. But yeah, The Last Castle fucking rules. And well, it looks like you can rent it on Prime Video for $4.99. I don't know. Maybe check it out on Plex. See where else it might be streaming. But The Last Castle fucking rules. Rest in peace, Robert Redford. In the spirit of these films, I'm going to lead us out of this Dread Media Top 5 with Muse and their song, Uprising. is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did ranting it at you. If you did, let me know. dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. Hey, if you have questions for a Q&A episode, I don't know, maybe if I get a bunch of questions, there will be an episode next week. But I think I am going to take a week or two off here. I'll have to, seeing as I have no reviews recorded and currently no schedule to record any. Your boy is working his ass off. In fact, yeah, I'm about 10 minutes from wrapping this whole episode, and then I got some shit to mark before I go to bed. So let's get out of here. Yeah, dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com, at dreadmedia on the things, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky. There is a Facebook group called Dread Media. The best way to support the show is patreon.com/dreadmedia. And we're going to get the fuck out of here with, you know, something that's, pretty high up on the labor rights popular music, although I guess, no, I don't think this is a folk song. This is more of a rock and roll song. If you actually listen to Bob Dylan's original version of it, it's definitely a rock, like a country rock and roll song, more than it is a folk song, but it's got the feeling of a folk song. And this is, Rage Against the Machine's version of Bob Dylan's Maggie's Farm. Fuck these fascists.
Maggie's mine no more. And I ain't gonna work for Maggie. gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. No, I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. Well, I try my best to be just like I am. But everybody wants you to be just like them. They say, what they say, and I just can't run. I ain't gonna work on. No, I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more.
Motherfucker, burn. Let it.